This is the Daily Detail, powered by 1819 News. Honest news.
Alabama.
Our great state.
The voice of Alabama values.
Alabama. Unbelievable people.
And now, here is Andrea Tice.
U.S. Senator Tommy Tuberville is issuing a warning after a bill passed the U.S. House, the Anti-Semitism Awareness Act. The bill claims to be an effort to deal with anti-Semitic protests on college campuses. However, Tuberville says this bill could be broadly interpreted in a way to silence all free speech. Tuberville says that people must be free to say what they think and that the only line they must not cross over is in taking actions that affect other people's lives. Tuberville says there's all kinds of hate speech already out there, and if the U.S. government endeavors to curb all of it, then they're essentially taking away free speech and the rights of people. Georgia Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene is in agreement with Tuberville. Taylor Greene did not vote to pass this House bill in the House, and she made a statement on social media that, as a Christian, she believes the gospel in full, every letter. And Taylor Greene says that the Bible clearly says Jesus was a Jew, as well as Son of God, who was crucified at the behest of the Jewish chief priest, religious leaders, and Jewish crowds. And then Jesus then rose from the grave, which is a core tenet of Christianity. Taylor Greene says it's not anti-Semitic to point out the facts from the Bible, and to say that it's anti-Semitic is really a veiled attack on Christianity. Taylor Greene said she will not compromise her faith to avoid wrongful name-calling. Well, there are only 3 official legislative days left on the 2024 calendar for the Alabama legislature, and within this time frame, it is possible but not probable that the Senate will have another round of voting on the gambling legislation to see if one of the no votes that killed the conference bill has been reversed. Also lined up for consideration is a legislative cap on increasing annual property taxes. That bill needs Senate approval. It's already passed the House. Also still to be considered are changes to the state ethics laws. That bill has passed the Alabama House and will undergo amendments on Tuesday within the Senate Judiciary Committee. And those who are supporting HB 385 are making a final push for that bill to be passed. State Representative Arnold Mooney offered HB 385 regarding public libraries and their advancement of sexually explicit or obscene books for children. The bill removes an exemption that is already in place under current state law when it comes to public libraries and obscenity laws. So this new bill, if passed, would make public libraries and public school libraries compliant with what is considered the distribution and/or marketing of obscene materials. A new Alabama law is set to go into effect this coming October 1st that has to deal with obscenity in many ways. Governor Ivey signed HB 164 into law that requires pornographic websites to register with the state and to offer age verification procedures in order to keep minors from accessing the content. Those websites must also provide a warning ahead of time to users about the harm that is done to the human brain through pornography. State lawmaker Bob Robbins is the sponsor of the bill and told the Montgomery Independent that this new law takes major steps towards protecting young minds and addressing the societal plague of pornography. Many of the Republican-led states have implemented a similar age verification law, and in some states, Pornhub has even quit operations altogether due to this new requirement. Those are states like Arkansas, Mississippi, Montana, North Carolina, Utah, and Virginia. Well, National Day of Prayer occurred last week, but conservative leaders in the state are still talking about some choices that were made within the Alabama legislature about who would take part in starting out that event. The president of Alabama Citizens Action Program, ALCAP, is Greg Davis. Davis also hosts Priority Talk on Birmingham 101.1 WXJC. Davis was at the Alabama State House for the National Day of Prayer when he witnessed the opening prayer being offered by a Hindu priest.
Okay, I mean, and there were a lot of Hindus in the building today there to celebrate that. As to my knowledge and knowledge of others I've talked to, I don't know that this has ever happened before. I think there was a lot of displeasure with it. I'm just guessing. That's my feel. And I think that Speaker Ledbetter decided, since it was National Day of Prayer, to also, and he may have done it last minute, I don't know, to couch that Hindu prayer, and he called it with prayers from all religions, is what he said, or other religions maybe. I will say this, there were a lot less people in there for the prayer than normal. I do think a lot of members just didn't go in because of not agreeing with the fact that they were having a Hindu prayer to open up the Alabama State House today.
For more in-depth stories affecting the state of Alabama, go to 1819news.com. In national news, the Prime Minister of Israel spoke with Joe Biden this past Monday as Israel prepares to wage war again with Hamas in its last stronghold known as Rafah. Biden is pushing Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to negotiate a ceasefire with Hamas instead, due to the fact that 1 million Palestinians are also living in Rafah who may or may not be in support of Hamas, but will certainly be affected if Israel invades. Netanyahu seems to be unfazed by Biden's argument. The Palestinians in Rafah have been warned to get out as the country proceeds with further offensives. Netanyahu said on Sunday that if Israel is forced to stand alone, Israel will stand alone. The Democrats in Congress are showing up this week in support of House Speaker Mike Johnson retaining his position as Speaker of the House, while conservative Republicans are vowing to proceed with a motion to vacate. Consider that Nancy Pelosi arrived at the Capitol building on Monday and was asked about her position on Johnson. This is what she said.
Do you support Leader Jeffery's move to support the Speaker, the current Speaker, on the motion to table?
I support our leader. I think he's very much in touch with our caucus, and yes, I will support him.
What does this say about Speaker Johnson if he has to turn to the minority party to survive?
He doesn't have to turn to the minority party. What the minority party is saying is we support the integrity of the House of Representatives, and we will not let it be littered by nonsense.
Democratic Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries did not even try to hide the reason why he's in favor of Johnson being Speaker of the House. Jeffries spoke about it in an interview with CBS.
Even though we're in the minority, we effectively have been governing as if we were in the majority because we continue to provide a majority of the votes necessary to get things done. Those are just the facts.
Meanwhile, Breitbart News and Punchbowl News are reporting that Johnson was at a fundraiser at the Four Seasons Hotel in Washington, D.C. this past Sunday. During that time, Johnson indicated that he's in favor of changing the House rules that allows for Congress members to call for a motion to vacate. This comes as Georgia Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene is bound and determined to bring up that motion this week in order to expose what she calls the uniparty, those who are wanting to stay in power on both sides of the aisle and are therefore willing to ignore their party and constituents' values and needs. Minority Leader Jeffries has already indicated that he's willing to help Johnson by voting to table the motion to vacate coming from Greene. Florida Congressman Matt Gaetz is laying low when it comes to this particular drama about the House speakership. His focus has been lately on the over 1,000 U.S. service members who are trapped in the country of Niger. Recently, the Biden administration said they would withdraw those troops from that country since it has become very hostile to U.S. presence there. However, Gaetz is sounding the alarm that the statement made from the White House has been all talk and no action.
3 days after I filed part one of the report that I am supplementing today, the Biden administration announced that we will be leaving Niger. A welcome sign, I'm sure, but the leaving didn't actually happen. We have people who are now more than 200 days into a 180-day rotation. And while the negotiation regarding retrograde and withdrawal are ongoing, the government in Niger is using the well-being and health of our service members as leverage to get what they want out of our government. Our troops aren't getting medicine for malaria, for cholesterol, for their blood pressure, chronic conditions. And I have received the letters from the wives, from the fathers of the people who are in Niger now, and they say, we know that our family members are being extorted by the local governments when they try to leave, hundreds of dollars to even bring a bag through the airport. We know that Russians are behind the wire. You know what a real U.S. president would do? Say that C-130s are on their way to Niger today with the water and the medicine and the food our troops need, that they will have a full fighter pilot escort there. And if the Nigeri government or any other third world thug tries to even turn on their air defense systems, we should show those leaders and those thugs what the target package looks like on their houses and their family members, because it should not be Americans that are suffering because President Biden and Blinken are so embarrassed that their strategy in Africa failed that they're willing to let Americans' conditions deteriorate.
Also happening in the U.S. House, the Ways and Means Committee has launched an investigation into the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. The chairman of that committee, Jason Smith, is demanding answers from the CEO of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce regarding donations that have been made to them from a very large organization, Tides Foundation. That foundation has a mission statement of undermining small businesses. Smith told Breitbart News that the U.S. Chamber of Commerce has been in operation with tax exemption, but no oversight, and that the Chamber of Commerce owes the American people an explanation as to why they're accepting suspicious donations to the tune of $12 million from those who advocate for policies that harm the business community. Smith indicated that this puts the tax exemption status of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce in jeopardy. New York judge Juan Merchan is threatening Donald Trump with jail time. Merchan started out this week referencing contempt of court charges for Trump and his lawyers for speaking out further about this case. Trump was given an ultimatum of taking down specific posts that were made on Truth Social. We don't know exactly what those posts are, but here's a rundown of the latest posts coming from Trump. One was an article from Politico on how the pro-Hamas protests on college campuses are being funded by Joe Biden's biggest campaign donors. There was another post of a video from attorney Dan Gelman, who spoke on Newsmax about this whole case.
Did the judge's nose grow when he said that he doesn't want to put President Trump in jail? Because I don't believe that, and I don't think anybody else believes that either. You know, this could have all been avoided if the judge just recused himself. The only reason that there is a gag order is because the judge doesn't want President Trump talking about all the wrong reasons that the judge is still in the case and how the case is a terrible case to begin with.
There was also a post that Trump made of a newly released rap song from Trump Latinos.
Donald Trump, yeah, that's my president.
For real.
Black MAGA, Black MAGA, Black MAGA, Black MAGA.
And there were pictures of race cars at the Grand Prix in Miami that Trump attended, along with massive crowds who were there cheering for him. Speaking of judges, 13 federal judges have signed on to a letter that was sent to the president of Columbia University in New York City. The judges all pledged to no longer hire any law clerks from the Columbia School of Law or Columbia College after the debacle that occurred on campus with pro-Hamas protesters setting up camp, blocking admission of other students, and vandalizing the administrative building. The judges said in the letter that after witnessing the disruption and destruction committed by these students, as well as off-campus agitators and some of the faculty, the judges no longer viewed Columbia as an institution of higher education, but an incubator for bigotry. The judges offered three steps for the university to take in order to regain their reputation: punish those who caused damage and broke the rules, maintain free speech neutrality while also upholding the rules of campus conduct, and allow for greater viewpoint diversity among staff and faculty. The judges pointed out that if Columbia had faced a campus uprising of religious conservatives who were calling abortion a tragic genocide, that no doubt the university leadership would have responded in a profoundly different way. On the election front, a big development just occurred in the state of Wisconsin. The Milwaukee Election Commission Executive Director, Claire Woodall Vogue, has resigned. Woodall Vogue was involved in controversial emails that were made on the night of the 2020 presidential election, where Trump was ahead by 120,000 votes. In that email, Woodall Vogue wrote that her county would be delivering the margin that would be needed to flip the state over to Joe Biden. She claims it was all in jest. However, at the same time, and in the same city where Woodall Vogue is, there was a sudden influx of 140,000 ballots for Joe Biden, all brought in at the last minute of the collection process. Woodall Vogue was also caught on video camera feeding in ballots to a vote tabulator in the early morning hours following of the 2020 election, and she had no other election officials with her or election observers. The Gateway Pundit, as well as investigative reporter Peter Bernegger, are two sources who have been looking into Woodall Vogue's actions in the past few years, including the fact that she was very busy giving daily reports on voting data in that city to Democrat operative Michael Spitzer Rubenstein. This all came ahead of the 2020 election. The McIver Institute was also instrumental in gaining the communications of Woodall Vogue that documented her help to many liberal-leaning organizations ahead of the November election. Bernegger posted on social media after Woodall Vogue was fired, saying this was the most corrupt election clerk in all of Wisconsin. You're listening to The Daily Detail from 1819 News.
If you are enjoying The Daily Detail and want to make sure the reports come up easily on your electronic device, then be sure to hit the subscribe or follow button on the main page of The Daily Detail on whatever podcasting app you've been using to listen. That could be Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Podbeam, or some other podcasting apps. You can also get the word out about The Daily Detail by sending a link to a friend or dropping me a 5-star rating. I surely do appreciate it. I'm Andrea Tice. I will be back again on Monday. Until then, have a wonderful weekend.
Alabama.
Our great state.
Alabama.
Of Alabama.
This has been The Daily Detail. For more up-to-date news, go to 1819news.com, where you'll find honest news and Alabama values.